Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, February 17th on IRIS. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page, two new projects proposed in Clear Lake. City considering $1.5 million in tax rebates for developments by Ashley Stewart, Globe Gazette. The City of Clear Lake is considering an amendment to its Consolidated Urban Renewal Plan that would allow it to provide up to nearly $1.5 million in financial incentives to two new commercial developments. City Administrator Scott Flory briefly reviewed the unnamed developments, including a 47,000 square foot commercial and retail space with related surface parking and a 6,000 square foot commercial space and incentives with the Clear Lake City Council Monday evening during its meeting. The two new projects would result in a developer's investment of at least $8.5 million, including $7.5 million and $1 million, respectively. The City of Clear Lake is proposing a 10-year incremental property tax rebate agreement in an amount not to exceed $850,000, with payments subject to the Council's annual appropriation to the developer of the 47,000 square foot commercial and retail space, with Flory said. The city would also finance municipal water and sanitary sewer service mains and laterals needed for the project with an additional $350,000 in incremental tax revenues. For the second development, the city is offering the developer a 7-year incremental property tax rebate agreement in an amount not to exceed $225,000, with payments subject to the council's annual appropriation. The city would use an additional $50,000 for municipal water and sanitary sewer connections and related improvements, as well as provide $15,000 in professional services reimbursement for civil engineering and legal fees incurred by the developer. City Councilman Bennett Smith said the proposed economic incentives for the two projects are, quote, very prudent and very appropriate, end quote. Quote, again, two more really exciting economic development projects for Clear Lake, he said, that's going to generate more long-term economic growth in our community, end quote. Iowa law requires cities to hold a public hearing to amend their consolidated urban renewal plans if they intend to use local incentives and tax increment revenues for development projects. Only projects within a city's consolidated urban renewal area are eligible for tax increment financing funds. Quote, so many cities that you'll see larger communities that might do this 50, 60 times a year, he said. We usually do it 3 or 4, end quote. Clear Lake last amended its urban renewal plan in 2020 for the Marriott Hotel and Event Center project in the Courtway Park subdivision east of Interstate 35. Clear Lake consolidated urban renewal area currently includes all properties within the following areas: Northwest Willow Creek, Surf District, Downtown, Northeast, Luker Memorial, Industrial Park, Apple Valley, and Industrial Expansion. The Clear Lake City Council unanimously approved a resolution setting a public hearing to amend its consolidated urban renewal plan for 6 p.m. on Monday, March 15th at the Council Chambers. The city will hold a consultation meeting with the other affected taxing entities of Cerro Gordo County on February 26. Flory anticipates that the council will act on letters of intent for the two commercial developments after the public hearing to amend the urban renewal plan. Tenants of the proposed developments will likely be disclosed in the spring, he said. Our next front page article, at least 16 across U.S. die from winter storm. Millions left without power. Deadly twister strikes North Carolina, by Brian Anderson, Associated Press, Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina. A winter storm that left millions without power in record-breaking cold weather claimed more lives Tuesday, including 3 people found dead after a tornado hit a seaside town in North Carolina and 4 family members who died in a Houston-area house fire while using a fireplace to stay warm. The storm that overwhelmed power grids and immobilized the southern plains carried heavy snow and freezing rain into New England and the deep south and left behind painfully low temperatures when chill warnings extended from Canada into Mexico. In all, at least 16 deaths were reported. Other causes included car crashes and carbon monoxide poisoning. The weather also threatened to affect the nation's COVID-19 vaccination effort. President Joe Biden's administration said delays in vaccine shipments and deliveries were likely. North Carolina's Brunswick County had little notice of the dangerous weather, and a tornado warning was not issued until the storm was already on the ground. The National Weather Service was, quote, very surprised how rapidly the storm intensified, and at the time of night when most people are at home and in bed, it creates a very dangerous situation, end quote, Emergency Services Director Ed Conroe said. In Chicago, a foot and a half of new snow forced public schools to cancel in-person classes for Tuesday. Hours earlier, along the normally balmy Gulf of Mexico, cross-country skier Sam Fagg hit fresh powder on the beach in Galveston, Texas. The worst U.S. power outages were in Texas, affecting more than 4 million homes and businesses. More than 250,000 people also lost power across parts of Appalachia, and another 250,000 were without electricity following an ice storm in northwest Oregon, according to PowerOutage.us, which tracks utility outage reports. 4 million people lost power in Mexico. Texas officials requested 60 generators from the Federal Emergency Management Agency and plan to prioritize hospitals and nursing homes. The state opened 35 shelters to more than 1,000 occupants, the agency said. More than 500 people sought comfort at one shelter in Houston. Mayor Sylvester Turner and said other warming centers had to be shut down because they lost power. After being without power since Monday, Natalie Harrell said she, her boyfriend, and 4 kids began sheltering at Gallery Furniture Store in Houston. Harrell said the warming center at the store, owned by Jim McInvigil, has provided people with food, water, and power to charge essential electronics. Quote, it's worse than a hurricane, Harrell said. I think we are going to be more days without light. That is what it seems like, end quote. Utilities from Minnesota to Texas implemented rolling blackouts to ease the burden on power grids straining to meet the extreme demand for heat and electricity. Blackouts of more than an hour began around dawn Tuesday for Oklahoma City and more than a dozen other communities, stopping electric-powered space heaters, furnaces, and lights just as temperatures hovered around minus 8 degrees. Oklahoma Gas and Electric rescinded plans for further blackouts but urged users to set thermostats at 68 degrees Fahrenheit, avoid using major electronic appliances, and turn off lights or appliances they are not using. Nebraska's blackouts came amid some of the coldest weather on record. In Omaha, the temperature bottomed out at 23 degrees below zero overnight, the coldest in 25 years. The Southwest Power Pool, a group of utilities covering 14 states, said the blackouts were, quote, a last resort to preserve the reliability of the electric system as a whole, end quote. The tornado that hit Brunswick County was an EF3 with winds estimated at 160 miles per hour, the Weather Service said on Twitter. 3 people died and 10 were injured when the tornado tore through a golf course community in another rural area just before midnight Monday, destroying dozens of homes. Sharon Benson, 63, said her roof was damaged and her garage door was blown off. Windows were shattered and nearby trees were uprooted. Quote, the sky lit up and there was a lot of pop, pop, popping, end quote, and thunder, she said. Authorities in multiple states reported death in crashes on icy roads, including 2 people whose vehicle slid off a road and overturned in a waterway in Kentucky on Sunday, state police said. A Mississippi man died after losing control of his vehicle, which overturned on an icy road Monday night near Starkville, Okotoboa County Coroner Michael Hunt said Tuesday. In Texas, 3 young children and their grandmother died in the Houston area fire, which likely began while they were using a fireplace to keep warm during a power outage, a fire official said. At least 13 children were treated for carbon monoxide poisoning at Cook Children's Medical Center in Fort Worth, the hospital said in a social media post, which warned that families were, quote, going to extreme measures to warm their homes, end quote, with propane or diesel burning engines and generators, as well as gas ovens and stovetops. One parent died of the toxic fumes. A pediatrician, Philip Scott, told Fort Worth television station KTVT in West Tennessee, a 10-year-old boy died after falling into an ice-covered pond on Sunday during a winter storm, fire officials said. Several cities had record lows. In Minnesota, the Hibbing Chisholm weather station registered minus 38 degrees Fahrenheit. Sioux Falls, South Dakota dropped to minus 26 Fahrenheit. Our last front page article, county signs off on $600,000 grant. Hanfit shares update on COVID-19 vaccines by Jared McNett, Globe Gazette. Tuesday morning was a six-figure sort of day for the Cerro Gordo County Board of Supervisors, along with signing an, quote, Iowa Economic Development Authority Community Block Grant Program, end quote, contract for $600,000 in funding to go to YSS Francis Luer in Mason City. The three-member board also moved forward on a plan to refinance 2012 capital loan notes it used to cover costs for the county's law enforcement center. According to District 3 Supervisor Chris Watts, the savings on that refinancing could be hundreds of thousands of dollars for Cerro Gordo. The agreement for the Francis Luer project involves not just the youth social services provider and the county, but the Regional North Iowa Area Council of Governments and the state of Iowa. The work itself is part of a larger $3.8 million renovation project that Francis Luer has been working on in phases and stages. The $600,000 is going toward phases 3 through 5 of the project, which are for the group's crisis intake center, its school, its dining facilities, and its outpatient facilities. According to community-based center director Shanda Hansen, such funding is crucial to completing the project. Quote, we had been put in a standstill, Hansen said. We'd finished stages 1 and 2, and in order to move forward, we really needed to secure some additional funding, and the community development block grant is critical, and we're just really thankful for the partnership, end quote. At this time, Hansen said that the hope is to finish the entire project by next summer, but that is still a soft target that could shift as Francis Luer works to get matters such as an environmental review taken care of. As for the refinancing, the county board was informed at the meeting that Northland Securities is currently taking bids from local banks on the matter. At its February 23rd meeting, the board intends to lock in the new rate. Midway through the meeting, CG Public Health Director Brian Hanfit gave the board an update about the latest COVID-19 vaccinations efforts across the county. Hanfit said that in the past week, the county had 3 mass vaccination clinics and used about 1,600 doses total, which includes both primary and boost doses. Quote, we're happy with the process and feel we could double the number of doses, end quote, Hanfit said. He also told the supervisors that the public health department is hoping to soon wind down its vaccination efforts of education providers and planning to soon ramp up its vaccinations of certain essential workers. Quote, we're now starting to reach out to manufacturers so we can start to get vaccine out to these groups, end quote, Hanfit said. After the meeting, Hanfit made clear that second doses for people are all guaranteed and are actually scheduled when people now get their first dose of COVID-19 vaccine. Quote, federal government is holding back those boost doses, so we don't even have to trigger those to be sent. They're just automatically sent, end quote, Hanfit said. Over the course of this week, the county will have about 450 boost doses that it's putting out. Hanfit also said that the window for getting a boost dose is between 28 and 42 days after receiving a primary dose. If someone doesn't get in during that time, they would have a start over their vaccination schedule. Quote, generally, we don't have any problem with meeting those timelines, end quote, Hanfit said. In local news, grab and give grocery event to benefit Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank, Globe Gazette staff. For the 9th year, the Cerro Gordo County Farm Bureau will sponsor the upcoming annual grab and give grocery event to benefit Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. On Tuesday, February 23rd, teams representing area businesses and organizations will compete each other and the clock to see who can gather groceries that come closest to a total of $250 in 5 minutes. The grab and give event will take place at Hy-Vee West in Mason City. All groceries collected will be donated to Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. Team registration will begin at 8 a.m. and the first heat will begin at 9 a.m. with each heat to follow immediately after the prior is done. Teams are welcome to decorate their shopping carts during the registration time period. Participating teams have a few ground rules to play by. They can't use calculators, writing utensils, or cell phones to add up their groceries totals. Teams will receive a list of items needed at the food bank about 5 minutes before their heat, and only team members can add groceries to their cart, though others can, quote, scout out, end quote, groceries and advise team members on their whereabouts. Competing businesses and organizations this year include Auto Edge, Car Grill, Cerro Gordo County Farm Bureau Financial, Clear Lake Bank and Trust, Farm Credit Services of America, Farmer State Bank, Henkel Construction, ISU Extension and Outreach, Kiss County, The Fox, Mason City Ford Chrysler, North Iowa Collision Center, North Iowa Coop, Pioneer, and Poet. Some participation slots are still open. To sign up your business, call 641-423-5824. For businesses unable to participate, monetary donations to the Hawkeye Harvest Food and Bank are encouraged. Checks can be made out to Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank and sent to 2650 Skyview Lane, Mason City, Iowa, 50401. Looking back, today is Wednesday, February 17th, the 48th day of 2021. There are 317 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history, on February 17th, 1815, the United States and Britain exchanged the instruments of ratification for the Treaty of Ghent, ending the War of 1812. On this date, in 1801, the U.S. House of Representatives broke an electoral tie between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, electing Jefferson president. Burr became vice president. In 1863, the International Red Cross was founded in Geneva. In 1864, during the Civil War, the Union ship USS Housatonic was rammed and sunk in Charleston Harbor, South Carolina, by the Confederate hand-cranked submarine H.L. Hunley in the first naval attack of its kind. The Hunley also sank. In 1897, the forerunner of the National PTA, the National Congress of Mothers, convened its first meeting in Washington. Our next article, Mason City Schools Share Vaccination Plans for Staff, by Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. For the majority of the past 2 months, Cerro Gordo Public Health and the Mason City Community School District have been in talks about when the district can get its staff vaccinated. At each of the past 4 Board of Education meetings, Superintendent Dave Verstige would give an update, stating that the vaccination day was getting closer. Now that plan has finally been released. On Tuesday afternoon, the Mason City staff received an email with information on a vaccination sign-up. CG Public Health will offer 2 time slots to vaccinate all school staff who want it. One is this Saturday, February 20th, from 9 a.m. to noon, while the next will happen on February 27th from 9 a.m. to noon. In the past, Prestige has made mention that the district surveyed its employees on the topic. According to results, around 80% of the district staff would be willing to take the vaccine it offered. Quote, really feel good about public health's plan to vaccinate our employees, end quote, Prestige said at a January board meeting. Some Cerro Gordo County school staff with underlying health conditions or older than 65 years of age have already received their first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Mason City school nurses were the first of district staff to receive the vaccine as well. After Prestige announced that a block of time had been marked off for CG Public Health to offer a clinic to Mason City staff at the board meeting on Monday, all staff will now have the opportunity. Quote, when we announce the staff's availability for vaccinations, that will include all of our substitutes, all of our non-teaching coaches, and any other significant personnel that work in our building on a regular basis that aren't technically school people, end quote, Verstige said. The announcement comes on the same day that the Mason City School District returned to a full-time in-person learning schedule. Moving to the opinion page, follow data, get children back to in-person school, from Joni Ernst. At a press conference this week, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki moved the goal post once again, claiming that the Biden administration aim is to have more than 50% of schools offer, quote, some teaching, end quote, in person, quote, at least one day a week, end quote, by the 100th day of Joe Biden's presidency. Yes, you read that right. President Biden's goal is to have kids in school only one day per week and no sooner than the end of April. Our youngest generation is falling behind. Virtual learning does not give them the attention they need to be successful, and the isolation it creates has had an enormous impact on their mental health. America's students deserve better. In Iowa, because of Governor Reynolds' bold leadership, many of our kids have been safely back in school since last August. Now the rest of the country needs to follow our lead. The science, the data, and the health experts alike have all made it clear that we can and should safely get our kids back in school. In January, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, recommended that if the proper precautions are taken, our schools should reopen as soon as possible. And just recently, President Biden's own CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, stated that the, quote, vaccination of teachers is not a prerequisite for safe reopening of schools, and that there is increasing data to suggest that schools can safely reopen, end quote. Governor Reynolds has led the way on this issue, signing legislation to require safe in-person learning in our state's public school system. Unfortunately, many politicians across the country are more loyal to left-wing special interests than the well-being of our kids and have failed to take this common sense step. That's why at the federal level, I'm helping lead an effort that will get our kids back in school. The Put Students First Act of 2021 would prohibit federal funding to schools that do not provide an in-person learning option by April 30th, 2021. This is a matter of emotional and academic development and the mental health of our kiddos, as well as all the well-being of working families. I'm proud to be a part of this effort that puts our children first. In addition to the impact on our kids, the closure of schools and child care centers has disproportionately impacted women, most notably moms. An analysis from the National Women's Law Center found that 275,000 women left in the workforce in January alone, with many staying home to care for their kids and often becoming their de facto teachers and tutors. Women across the country have made enormous strides in all fields of service, and our moms shouldn't be forced to put their careers on hold because our schools are failing to do their jobs. As a mom, my heart breaks for all the young boys and girls across the country who are struggling as a direct result of remote learning. The toll it's taken on the progress women have made in the workforce is also devastating. The federal government should be pushing policies that support our next generation of leaders, but instead we're punishing them. It's past time we follow the science and the data. Let's do the right thing by safely getting our kids back in the classroom and help get their parents back to work. Our children, working families, and economy depend on it. Again, that opinion came from Joni Ernst, a native of Red Oak, represents Iowa in the United States Senate. Our next opinion, administration struggles to fulfill pledges it made, by Brian York. On January 21, President Biden's first full day in office, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki began her briefing with this. Quote, when the president asked me to serve in this role, we talked about the importance of bringing truth and transparency back to the briefing room, end quote. Now, the administration's position on opening schools shut by COVID-19 lockdowns is testing that pledge. Psaki's problem started February 3rd when the White House COVID response team held a teleconference for the press. Among the group was Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the president's new choice to head the Centers for Disease Control. A reporter asked Walensky about the CDC's priorities for vaccination, and in particular, whether, quote, the federal government would be working more closely with states to kind of get more vaccinations to teachers in particular so that schools can reopen in the fall, end quote. Walensky said that a group of inside the CDC, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, had created a priority list for those receiving vaccinations. In December, the committee included teachers in what was called the 1B category, meaning they would be among those who should be next in line, but that wasn't law. It was the CDC's guidance for states to follow or not follow. Quote, we've left that to the states to manage, Walensky explained. In terms of recognizing the prioritization of ACIP, but also manage at their own local level, end quote. And then, quote, that said, I want to be very clear about schools, which is yes, ACIP has put teachers in the 1B category, the category of essential workers. But I also want to be clear that there is increasing data to suggest that schools can safely reopen and that safe reopening does not suggest that teachers need to be vaccinated in order to reopen safely, end quote. There it was, the head of the CDC frankly stating that the science shows schools can safely reopen and that the reopening of
the schools does not depend on vaccinating teachers, given the current debate in which teachers' unions, the longtime allies and benefactors of Democratic politicians from Joe Biden on down, are demanding that schools remain closed and that teachers be vaccinated before any reopening can occur. Walensky's statement was big news. Would Democratic office holders listen to the science and break with the unions? It was such a big news that the White House immediately ran away from it. At the next day's briefing on February 4th, a reporter asked Press Secretary Psaki, quote, yesterday the head of the CDC, as you know, said that it was safe to reopen schools without vaccinating teachers. You said that the White House was still waiting for the official guidance before making a final determination. Why isn't what the director of the CDC says, why isn't that enough? End quote. Psaki said there was a CDC guidance process going on that hadn't been completed, and she said that the president wants schools to reopen, and he wants to rely on medical experts in making decisions. And then she came to Dr. Walensky, quote, so we're just not, Dr. Walensky spoke in her personal capacity. Obviously, she's the head of the CDC, but we're going to wait for the final guidance to come out so we can use that as a guide for schools around the country, end quote. So there it was. Dr. Walensky was speaking in her personal capacity. She is director of the CDC. She is part of the White House COVID response team, and she was speaking on a White House teleconference. But never mind, she was speaking in her personal capacity. Now the White House can say to the teachers' unions, don't worry, Dr. Walensky didn't really mean it. She was just speaking for herself. We're not going to cross you and announce that schools should reopen. You're still in charge. And as for Psaki's pledge to bring, quote, truth and transparency, end quote, back to the briefing room, well, perhaps she was just speaking in her personal capacity. Again, that opinion came from Brian York, who is chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner and a Fox News contributor. And our last opinion, ineffective impeachment means no consequences, by Gromer Jeffers Jr. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has spent 4 years defending the actions of Donald Trump. Now, after the former president's second impeachment, the powerful Republican conceded that the former president is, quote, practically and morally responsible for provoking, end quote, the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Quote, no question about it, end quote, McConnell said Saturday. Quote, the people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president, and having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories, and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting to the largest megaphone on planet Earth, end quote. Still, McConnell and 42 other Republicans voted against convicting Trump of inciting the marauders that stormed the Capitol. The acquittal means Trump is free to run for president in 2024. McConnell said that Trump's actions, as deplorable as they appear, are irrelevant because the Senate didn't have standing to rule on the case. McConnell's position is rejected by many legal school scholars and the Senate, including some Republicans who voted that it was constitutional for senators to consider convicting Trump and disqualifying him from holding public office again. Trump's acquittal exposes that the process of impeaching a president is a feckless endeavor that puts partisan politics ahead of holding officials accountable for their actions. The framers of the Constitution wanted impeaching and removing a president from office to be difficult, rare, and immune to political vendettas, but leaving the Senate to try a president on impeachment charges means the outcome of the process will hinge on the political dynamic at play, not the evidence presented at the trial. There are 48 Democrats, 2 independents, and 50 Republicans in the Senate. Since the independents caucus with the Democrats control the chamber, but House managers failed to get 2/3 of the Senate to vote to convict Trump. Only 7 Republicans joined Democrats in voting to hold Trump accountable for the January 6th riot. Notably, that's more bipartisanship than is typically seen in impeachment trials. Even though members of his own party believed Trump helped cause the fuel in the insurrection at the Capitol, the House members and senators are powerless to hold him accountable because politics trump facts. McConnell Kavanaugh pointed out that if Trump pays a legal price for his actions, it will be through the nation's criminal justice system. That's unlikely because, quote, incitement, end quote, as a legal definition, could be much harder to prove in a court of law than in an impeachment trial. Trump's true trial will be conducted by the American people, and in that respect, this week's impeachment proceedings are useful. If the people believe Trump must pay a price for the events of January 6th, he'll never again be a serious contender for president. His status as a leader of the Republican Party will fade. Politicians are driven by public opinion. Most Republicans believe that bucking the former president will result in them having a political price to pay. That's not exactly a testament in political courage, but it's a political reality. But another reckoning with Trump is on the horizon. The former president is signaling that he's not leaving the political scene. Quote, we have so much work ahead of us, and quote, Trump said in a statement after his acquittal. It's up to Americans to decide Trump's future standing and his place in history, and Republican voters will determine whether to stick with Trump or transition to other leaders. Trump once said that he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue in New York and not lose his supporters. That view, again, will be put to the test. And again, that last opinion came from Gromer Jeffers Jr., who is a political writer for the Dallas Morning News. For our political cartoon today, we have a man and a woman, and it looks like they are in their kitchen. Behind them are some cupboards up top and up at the bottom. There is a sink and a little coffee pot with some coffee in it. On the other side of the room, there is a dinner table with a lighting fixture above it. They have a little dog sitting next to them. It's very cute. And the man says, did you decide what you're giving up for Lent? And the woman says, who is also holding a very long piece of paper in her hand, it kind of reminds me of like Santa's list, his naughty or nice list. It's a very long piece of paper. And the woman says, first, I need to check the list of things I gave up for the pandemic. Moving to the obituaries, Nina, known as Vanola Deagle, February 2nd, 1920, February 14th, 2021, Norris Springs. Nina, known as Vanola Deagle, 101 years old, passed away on Sunday, February 14th, 2021, at the Norris Springs Care Center. The family would like to thank the Norris Springs Care Center and Hospice of North Iowa for their excellent care given to mom. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the family will be having a private celebration of life at the United Methodist Church in Norris Springs, Iowa, with Pastor Sue Simmons officiating. Burial will follow at Park Cemetery in Norris Springs. Live streaming of the service will be available on the Hogan Bremer Moore Facebook page at 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 20th, 2021. The link will be included. Vanola Deagle began and ended life in a pandemic. Vanola's mother, Nina, was sick with the Spanish flu when she was born on February 2nd, 1920, near the end of the deadly flu pandemic. Her father, Henry Steedle, hired a nurse to care for the family until all were recovered. Henry and Nina Steedle farmed with horses just north of Norris Springs. They already had a son, Vern, when Vanola was born. Vanola was educated in rural and town schools in Norris Springs, Iowa, graduating in 1937. She received her degrees from Clark College in Dubuque, Iowa, in English and home economics. Vanola was a talented orator and directed many skits and plays to entertain others. She taught in both Union and Norris Springs, Iowa. In 1943, she married Lester Deagle, who farmed 6.5 miles north of Norris Springs. She and Lester raised twin daughters, Mary and Linda. Vanola's daughters are most grateful to her because she devoted her life to them and her 6 grandchildren. Vanola was a Norris Springs United Methodist Church member and was active with the Sunday school program, choir director, song leader, and participated in women's circles. She and others organized a 4-H club to help young girls learn many skills. Mary and Linda most enjoyed singing duets together that Vanola helped them perform. Lester and Vanola retired from farming in 1975, built a home in Norris Springs, and moved to town. Then they traveled extensively, went on fishing trips and enjoyed following the grandchildren's activities. The couple worked together on many large gardening projects in town and out in the country. Their grandchildren enjoyed coming out to help on the farm garden. Vanola was a school volunteer for 14 years and loved working with the children. Lester passed away in 2001 after 58 years of happy marriage. Vanola was an excellent seamstress and made many pieces of Hardinger embroidery for families and friends. She always hosted family gatherings, was an excellent cook, and made cookies to share. Vanola lived in her home in Nora Springs until she was 99 years old. She then moved to the Nora Springs Care Center, where she enjoyed playing cards with old friends as well as other social activities. The family hosted her 100th birthday with a large party for relatives and friends at the care center. Only her daughters were with her on her 101 birthday because of the COVID-19 pandemic of 2020. Left to cherish Nina's memories are her children, Mary, spouse Brian Snell, and Linda, spouse Stephen Duvall, grandchildren, Brendan, spouse Katie Snell, Christian, spouse Katie Snell, Megan, spouse Brett Hartman, Laura, spouse James Brown, Julia, spouse Stephen Hansen Duvall, and Elise, spouse Rex Davidson. Great-grandchildren, Bryce, Blake, Lola, Lucy, Calvin, Ida, Sol, Greer, and Ava. Nephew, Charles Deagle. Great-nieces and nephews, Steve, Julie, Vern, and Cynthia, and families, and also their mother, Mary, spouse Wayne Schmidt, and other family and friends. Many loved ones preceded Vanola in death. Facebook.com/ Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, Scheckler Colonial Chapel, 114 North Hawkeye Avenue, Nora Springs, 641-749-2210, colonialchapels.com. Irene D. Munson Hansen, Mason City. Irene D. Munson Hansen, 87, of Mason City, died on Monday, February 15th, 2021, at Good Shepherd Health Center in Mason City. A memorial service will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, February 20th, 2021, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street Northeast, Mason City, with Reverend Kathy Graves of Trinity Lutheran Church officiating. Irene's family will greet relatives and friends 1 hour prior to her service at the funeral home on Saturday. Should friends desire, memorials may be left in her honor to the American Cancer Society or Trinity Lutheran Church. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street Northeast, Mason City, 641-423-2372, colonialchapels.com. Mary Lou Boothroyd, Britt. Mary Lou Boothroyd, 73, of Britt, passed away Monday, February 15th, 2021, at Westview Care Center in Britt. Services for Mary Lou Boothroyd will be held at a later date. www.ewingfh.com, Ewing Funeral Chapel, 178 Center Street, West, Britt, Iowa, 50423, 641-843-3839. August R., known as Augie Bauman, Buffalo Center. A memorial service for August R., known as Augie Bauman, 78, of Buffalo Center, will be held at Saturday, February 20th, 2021, at 11 a.m. at Bethlehem Lutheran Church in Buffalo Center. His family will greet friends 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Social distancing practices will be followed and masks are required. The memorial service will be live streamed on Oak Crest Funeral Services Facebook page, www.facebook.com/OakCrestFuneralServices.com. Oak Crest Funeral Services of Buffalo Center is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences may be made to www.OakCrestFuneralServices.com. Ella Mae McNeely. Ella Mae McNeely, age 77, of Mason City, died on Saturday, February 13th, 2021, at her home in Mason City. A private family burial will take place on Friday, February 19th, 2021, at West Prairie Lutheran Church Cemetery, rural Leland, Iowa. A memorial service is tentatively being planned for this summer. Scott Funeral Homes, 505 North Clark Street in Forest City, is assisting the family. You can contact the family with online condolences at www.scottfuneralhomes.com, 641-585-2685. Moving to the sports page, prep roundup, Charles City boys edge Mason City. Comets storm back from halftime deficit to prevail over Mohawks by Shane Lance, Globe Gazette. The Charles City boys basketball team took down Mason City on Monday night in both teams' final games of the regular season as the Comets stormed back from an 8-point halftime deficit to beat the Mohawks 61-58. The Mohawks went up in the first quarter 15-7 and then scored 20 points in the second to lead at the half 35-27, but in the third and fourth quarters, the Comets' offense outscored Mason City 34-23 to snag the comeback win. Senior J.J. Ritter led the Comets with 17 points, while senior Caden Berry had 7 rebounds and 3 assists. Junior Corey Miner had another big scoring day for Mason City with 20 points, and junior Carter Thomas contributed 10 rebounds, 3 blocks, and 5 assists. Isaiah Washington had a double-double with 15 points and 10 rebounds. Quote, I was really proud of our fight all night, end quote, Mason City head coach Nick Trask said. Quote, I felt really great in the last 3 minutes, but a series of missed layups and missed free throws made it tough to close out the game. Washington had a great game tonight, earning a double-double and had an MVP performance for us. He continues to get better every time, end quote. Mason City finishes the regular season with a 5-16 overall record and will open the postseason on Monday with a Class 4A Sub-State 8 game at Norwalk. Charles City improved to 9-12 with the win and will play on Monday at Crestwood in the first round of the Class 3A Sub-State 3 tournament. Boys basketball, West Fork 80, St. Agsnar 34. The West Fork boys basketball team walloped St. Agsnar on Monday night 80-34 as the Warhawks improved 18-3 and advanced to the second round of the Class 1A Sub-State 2 tournament. Senior Caden Ames finished the night with 25 points and one of which was his 1,000th career points. Seniors Joe Ingham and Jacob Washington each scored 11 points in the game, with Ingham also collected 10 rebounds. The victory was the 600th career win for head coach Frank Scones. The Warhawks will play again on Thursday against AGWSR. With the loss, St. Agsnar ends its season at 5-17. North Iowa 80, Newman Catholic 66. The North Iowa boys basketball team scored an upset postseason victory on Monday night as the Bison took down Newman Catholic 80-66. Bison senior Dominic Price scored a team-high 25 points and collected 8 rebounds. No stats were available for the Knights, who ended the season with a 17-5 record. North Iowa will play Bishop Garrigan on Thursday in the Class 1A Sub-State 2 second round. Lake Mills 75, West Bend Mallard 28. The Lake Mills boys basketball team earned a dominant 75-28 victory on Monday night over West Bend Mallard in the first round of the Class 1A Sub-State 2 playoffs as senior Deshaun Lennon exploded for 24 points. The Bulldogs roared out in front to earn a 17-6 lead in the first quarter and 22-6 in the second to take a 39-12 halftime lead. In the second half, Lake Mills outscored the Wolverines 36-16 to improve to 22-0 on the year. Aside from Lynn, senior Caleb Bacon also had a big night with 16 points, 8 rebounds, 8 steals, and 5 assists. Wolverines sophomore Sam Fair led his squad with 8 points on the night. Lake Mills will play in the second round on Thursday night against West Hancock. West Hancock 45, St. Edmund 35. The West Hancock boys basketball team beat St. Edmund on Monday night 45-35 as the Eagles advanced to the second round of the Class 1A Sub-State 2 tournament. With the win, the Eagles improved to 12-11 on the season and will play on Thursday night at Lake Mills. Our next front page article, Prep Girls Basketball, Clear Lake Girls back in action. After COVID-19 pause, Lions have a full team available by Shane Lance, Globe Gazette. For the Clear Lake Girls Basketball team right now, every game is a gift. A few weeks ago, the Lions thought their season was over. In the days after Clear Lake's 56-14 win over Hampton Dumont Cal on January 29th, a team outbreak of COVID-19 put the players into quarantine with no guarantees that they would be back in time for the postseason. season. Once it was determined that players had been exposed, the program was put in this strange position of hoping for positive cases, as players who tested positive would be allowed to return earlier because of when they were exposed to the virus. Those who tested negative, and even those who tested negative but who had antibodies, had to sit out for 2 weeks. Quote, before going in, you don't want anybody to be positive, but that was the only way we could play, and quote, head coach Bart Smith said. Quote, some kids were positive, and we definitely had it going around with some kids. There is that thought of, we're done, and there is nothing we can do about it, but we had girls to get tested, and we had enough to play, end quote. This past Saturday, after 15 days without a game, the Lions came back in time to play Hampton Dumont Cal in the first round of the Class 3A Region 4 quarterfinal. Quote, we had to do what we had to do to have 7 players ready to go, or our season was done, Smith said. They had to go get tested, and we had some positive cases, but we've got them all back, end quote. Before getting tested, Smith and Molesby admitted they were prepared for the news that the season was over. If they had no positive cases after being exposed, the team wouldn't have been able to field enough players to play. The news would have been especially gutting for the team's seniors, who would end their Clear Lake basketball careers on a sour note. Quote, we all got tested and I thought it was going to be over, senior Allie Molesby said. They even said, like, I think your season is done, but the people who tested positive, they said later, could play. It made me work even harder to keep my season going, end quote. Only 4 players returned to practice at first, according to Molesby, as the rest of the team continued their quarantine. After 2 weeks away from the court, getting back into game shape was difficult. Quote, Smith had us running and it was really hard, Molesby said, but I knew we had to push through that. I didn't know if we were actually going to be able to come back, but since we had enough players to play, we could play. I'm just grateful for that and that my season wasn't over because of COVID, end quote. With only 7 players and just 2 seniors suiting up in Molesby and Chelsea Hulk, the Lions had no depth against the Bulldogs, but thanks to 18 points from freshman forward Zeta Johnson and a double-double from Hulk, the Lions beat the Bulldogs 48-32. Quote, Smith told me and Allie that we'd be playing the whole game, so we just had to take that into our hands, Hulk said. Just basically get the young ones going and getting the nerves easy. It was senior leadership, basically, end quote. On Tuesday, the team is scheduled to get the remainder of its roster back 1 day before its regional semifinal game against Iowa Falls Alden. Before they went on a 2-week sabbatical, the Lions were one of the hottest teams in Class 3A with 7 straight wins in the number 2 state ranking. After battling through injuries to several of their key starters early in the season, the Lions have proven that they are a team capable of pushing past adversity. Quote, they're overcome a lot of this year with injuries early and having to deal with that, Smith said. They're a resilient group of kids that really played well together and meshed well together. They all understand that it's a tournament time and it's time to play and time to compete, end quote. The Lions and Cadets will play on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. for a spot in the regional finals. Our last sports article, prep boys basketball, Forest City aims for complete games. Coach, against good teams, you can't play just a half, end quote, Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. When talking to Forest City boys basketball head coach Dan Rosacker about the regular season and the upcoming postseason game against Garner Hayfield Ventura, there seems to be a common theme echoed in almost every answer. 32 minutes. That's the amount of time that an Iowa high school basketball game takes. The challenge for Rosacker and his team playing at the highest level for the entirety of those 32 minutes. Quote, we get great halves, but against really good teams, you can't play just a half, Rosacker said. We found that out at West Fork when we played a great second half, but fell short. That's been our challenge all year, and we're running out of time right now, end quote. Monday night's Class 2A first round postseason game against Central Springs in Forest City was a perfect example of the tale of two halves. The Indians struggled defensively for the first 16 minutes and only led by 5 points at the break. Forest City responded in the second half by playing up to its capability. Senior guard Noah Miller scored 17 points in the third quarter alone, and the Indians outscored the Panthers in the second half 34-18 to earn a 66-45 win over Central Springs. If the phrase 32 minutes seems like it's being overused, try being a Forest City basketball player. Rosacker has echoed this sentiment to his team for a majority of the season. Quote, it seems like every night coach comes in and says that we've got to play a full 32 minutes, Miller said. Whether we miss a 4-minute stretch where we don't play our best basketball, we've just got to get to that 32 minutes and we'll be tough to beat, end quote. Figuring out how the team can play its best basketball for the entirety of a game is something the Indians have been working toward all season, but it's really as simple as doing the little things like setting good screens and making the extra pass, which Rosacker says is the key. Another way the Indians can keep advancing further into the playoffs is riding Miller's hot hand. Miller averaged 16 points per game during the season and finished with 28 points in Monday's night win. When he is on, everything opens up for Forest City offense. Quote, it wasn't just Noah going one-on-one. He got a lot of touches within the offense, Rosacker said. Guys were looking for him, but they were still running the offense, end quote. Miller and the Indians will have to play their best basketball of the season if they're to get a win on Thursday over Garner Hayfield Ventura. The Indians just snuck past the Cardinals 39-36 after a second half comeback in the last matchup between the two teams on January 21. How do the Indians hit the road this time around and earn the win? You guessed it. Quote, we've got to put a complete game together, Rosacker said. We're not going to go to Garner against a talented team like that and play a half. We tried that last time and got lucky. This time we've got to play 32 minutes, end quote. The Indians play in the Class 2A Substate 3 second round at 7 p.m. on Thursday at Garner. Moving back to state news, Carlin enters a Senate race calls for election reforms by Earl Horlick and Dave Dreesen, Sioux City Journal, Sergeant Bluff. As he formally jumped into the race for the U.S. Senate seat Monday, Jim Carlin cited his career as a soldier, trial lawyer, and state senator in which he repeatedly fought, quote, for the underdogs of this world, end quote. Carlin himself would be a decided underdog if the fellow Republicans he seeks to replace, Senator Chuck Grassley, decides to run for an eighth term. The 58-year-old Sioux Citian did not mention Grassley during his campaign kickoff Monday morning at the American Legion Post in Sergeant Bluff. Grassley, who is 87 years old, has said he will announce his intentions in several weeks. His grandson, Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley, told WHO TV Sunday that he expects his grandfather to run for another six-year term. During his speech, Carlin stood clearly with former President Trump, who was acquitted Saturday by the U.S. Senate for his alleged role in a group of Trump supporters storming the U.S. Capitol on January 6. The breach came as Congress began counting the electoral votes in the election won by Joe Biden. 4 weeks before, Trump claimed that the election was stolen from him, despite his campaign losing numerous lawsuits challenging the results. Carlin gave credence to such claims of election irregularities Monday, saying, quote, never again should the political class abdicate its responsibility to investigate and hold hearings when millions of Americans have doubts about the legitimate winner of the election, end quote. Quote, we are equal in the words of the Constitution, and we are supposed to be equal in the eyes of the law, end quote, Carlin told a group of about 20 supporters. Quote, this past election proved we are not when there are different standards about who gets to vote, how they can vote, and when they are allowed to vote, and who supervises the count when votes are tabulated in the dark of the night. The American democracy will crumble if voters lose faith in the integrity of elections and those who count the ballots, end quote. Carlin cited numerous successes of Trump's presidency, which included standing up to China for unfair trade practices, appointing nominees to the Supreme Court who, quote, preserved freedom and self-determination, end quote, negotiating, quote, meaningful peace deals, end quote, in the Middle East, and policies that caused the economy to boom and salaries for the working middle class to increase by $6,000. Quote, sometimes you can know who a person is by their enemies. No one knows this better than President Trump. The same people who threaten our freedoms and seek to control what we see, read, and hear from one another hated him, Carlin said. Still, he stood up for us for 4 years, end quote. As a U.S. senator, Carlin said he would work to preserve rural America, restore faith in democracy, stand up to China, and win the fight for free speech against giant tech companies whom he said have consolidated too much power. He had harsh words for the U.S. tax code, which he called an, quote, abomination, end quote, in a welfare state that personalizes married couples with children. Carlin, a U.S. Army veteran, has practiced law in Sioux City since 1992. He earned his B.S. degree in economics from the University of Massachusetts and his law degrees from Marquette University. Quote, I've made a career of fighting for the underdogs of this world, fighting for everyday Iowans, the working people, the forgotten man of Iowa, he told supporters Monday. That's what I do, end quote. Carlin, who is 58 years old, served in the Iowa House and then was elected to the Iowa Senate in a 2017 special election to fill a vacancy created after State Senator Bill Anderson resigned to take an economic development position in Cherokee. Carlin won a full four-year term in the Senate in 2018. A pro-life supporter, he cited his efforts with other state lawmakers to pass a heartbeat protection bill. Carlin and his wife, Donna, are the parents of three children. Our next article, deposed leader faces new charge. Count could allow Juanta to detain Myanmar's Suu Kyi indefinitely. Associated Press, Yagoon, Myanmar. Police in Myanmar filed a new charge against ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi, her lawyer said Tuesday, in a move that may allow her to be held indefinitely without trial as part of an intensifying crackdown by authorities who seized power in a coup. Suu Kyi, who was deposed and detained in the military takeover on February 1, already faced a charge of illegally possessing walkie-talkies, an apparent attempt to provide a legal veneer for her house arrest. Under the new charge, she is accused of breaking a law that has been used to prosecute people who have violated coronavirus restrictions, lawyer Kin Mong Za told reporters after meeting with a judge in a court in the capital, Naypyidaw. It carries a maximum punishment of 3 years in prison, but perhaps more worryingly, because of changes to the penal code instituted by the Juanta last week, it could allow her to be detained indefinitely, even without a court's permission. Suu Kyi's lawyer told reporters he has not seen her since her arrest and only arrived after an unexpected video conference the judge said had been held with her. The legal maneuver comes 2 weeks after the military seized power in a coup that shocked many in the international community who had been hopeful that Myanmar was taking steps toward democracy. Our next article, lawsuit says Trump incited insurrection. Congressman also names Giuliani extremist group by Eric Tucker, Associated Press, Washington. The House Homeland Security chairman accused Donald Trump in a federal lawsuit Tuesday of inciting the deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and conspiring with his lawyer and extremist groups to try to prevent Congress from certifying the results of the presidential election he lost to Joe Biden. The lawsuit from Democratic Representative Beanie Thompson is part of an expected wave of litigation over the January 6th riot and is believed to be the first filed by a member of Congress. It seeks unspecified punitive and compensatory damages. It also names as defendants Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal lawyer, and the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, extremist organizations that have had members charged by the Justice Department with taking part in the siege. Quote, all I wanted to do was do my job, and the insurrection that occurred prevented me from doing that, end quote. Thompson, Democrat of Mississippi, told reporters Tuesday as he recounted his experiences as Trump loyalists broke into the Capitol and disrupted the constitutionality-mandated process of certifying the election. A Trump advisor, Jason Miller, said in a statement that Trump did not organize the rally that preceded the riot and, quote, did not incite or conspire to incite any violence at the Capitol on January 6th. End quote. A lawyer for Giuliani did not immediately return an email seeking comment. Briefly, Trump, former President Donald Trump, blistered Mitch McConnell as a, quote, political hack, end quote, on Tuesday. McConnell over the weekend said Trump was responsible for the deadly insurrection at the Capitol on January 6, but only after he joined other Republicans in voting against the former president's impeachment conviction. Iraq, U.S.-led coalition contractor was killed and an unspecified number of other civilians were wounded Monday when a barrage of rockets struck outside an airport near where U.S. forces are based in northern Iraq, Iraqi security and coalition's officials said. A little-known Shiite military group claimed responsibility. Military drill. The Iranian and Russian militaries kicked off a joint naval drill in the Indian Ocean aimed at boosting security of maritime trade in the region, Iran's state TV reported on Tuesday. Tehran has stepped up military cooperation with Beijing and Moscow amid regional tensions with the United States. Vegas Airport. A county board voted unanimously Tuesday to rename Busy McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas after former U.S. Senator Harry Reid of Nevada. There have been longstanding calls to rename the airport. Its current namesake, former Nevada Senator Patrick McCarran, was known for his contributions to aviation along with his anti-immigrant and anti-Semitic views. Activists. Two former Hong Kong lawmakers pleaded guilty to illegal assembly charges Tuesday as a trial opened for them and seven other prominent democracy activists in what is seen as a crackdown on dissent in the semi-autonomous Chinese territory. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, February 17th on Iris. I'm your reader, Aaron. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.